Blow the horn. Let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
Hello and welcome to the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, last night we saw the Alabama Crimson Tide wallop the Panthers of Georgia State. And for many fans, they saw exactly what they wanted and then left at halftime. From our vantage point, that's when the fun really started, when we got to see a prolonged view of the youngsters and some of the players that will contribute to teams in the future. What did you see last night that really caught your eye?
You know, I agree with you. This was like a glorified A-Day game, but even better, because instead of watching the third string play the third string, we got to see the effort from Georgia State. You know, they wanted to be there, and so when they were playing our twos and threes, they were really giving it all they had. And so to see some of these young guys and to see some of these veteran guys like a Jarrell Harris to find out once and for all, you know, why are you not in the starting lineup? It answered some questions for juniors who, where have you been for 3 years? And then it answered questions for the redshirt freshmen. Man, this is going to be a nice 3 years for you going forward.
Yeah, it was good to see some of these players play with live rounds and live bullets in the air, so to speak. Where do you want to take us first, offense or defense?
I guess let's start with offense. You know, in looking at the numbers, I think from an offensive standpoint, it couldn't have gone any better if you're the Alabama coaching staff. Because with the, you know, I guess with the exception of the two missed field goals, if you don't have missed field goals, then you have essentially scored on your first 10 drives. And so to be able to go down the field after turnovers or just driving the field, you come out with your starters, you drive the length of the field, you go 70 yards, you score a touchdown. Then you proceed to score on the next drive on an 11-play drive, so there you are staying on the field. Then you come back after the missed field goal, you know, Cade Foster, 54-yarder. It was good to put him in that situation.
Yep.
So how are you going to do on the 54-yarder if we need you doing that against Auburn on Friday? So it's like they got to kind of test everything. They got to let the long field goal kicker try the long one, the short one try the short one. But the fact that you got to play all of your offensive guys because you had so many long drives, you got to get all of them on the field.
And that was good to see. And it was good to see some of the player rotation. You know, just before half, we rotated A.J. McCarron in, and we played McCarron the rest of the first half, or I guess it was most of the second quarter, really. We played McCarron with the starting line, which I thought was good, and he had Eddie Lacy in with him, who effectively was the second team running back.
Give him protection and see how he's going to do.
But we rotated out a lot of the starting receivers, and so A.J. didn't play with Darius, and he didn't play with Mays, and he didn't play much with Julio. And he played more with the Norwoods, the backups. And so that gave him the opportunity. As I was watching the game in the stands last night, I thought, this is next year's team. The starting offensive line who we return, it's Lacy getting a lot more carries. I know we'll have Trent, but in effect,
Lacy will be playing Trent's role. Yeah.
Right. But in effect, that was a vision of next year's team. And I enjoyed watching that. I wish that they had been able to put some points on, a few more points. But it was good to see. And then as we drove up until half, we rotated the entire starting line out as a unit and brought in the second team line as a unit. That was good to see. There was from some of the more observant fans, there were some applause there and recognition of the starting O. And unfortunately, they drove to the nine, and our short, accurate kicker nailed the upright. And so they didn't get points on the board going in the half. But it was good to see. And then, of course, they played most of the third quarter too. So it was good to see the backups. I thought they performed reasonably well.
They did, and you know, Darius Hanks and Marquise Mays are going to be back, and so they'll be starters. But you know, my take on that was, okay, who is McCarron working with in practice? He is working with the Kenny Bells and the Earl Alexanders and the Kevin Norwoods.
Yep.
So it's almost like give him protection, okay? But he's handing the ball off to Lacy, and he's throwing to these receivers. I'm putting you in the best chance to be successful in this game because you don't have to worry about timing with Mays and Hanks.
Sure.
You get to work with the people that you work with, but you get to work with a better offensive line than you normally don't get to work with.
Yeah. No, that was good. I just had a couple other observations. I know we don't want to talk too much about the starters, but Julio had a sensational leaping touchdown grab. I guess we can check that off. That's the third time we've seen a touchdown on that play.
We can guarantee we won't see that on Friday against Auburn.
Well,
they've seen that in the film.
Or we'll guarantee that we will see it. I'm just glad that the last two times that we ran that, we lost those ball games. And so I got an eerie feeling when we scored a touchdown. There's no way that that's going to be 3-for-3, but fortunately it wasn't. Chris Underwood caught a touchdown, and so he's well deep in the tight end ranks, and so that was good to see him do that. Justin Fowler, part-time fullback, part-time linebacker, part-time running back, actually had the longest play from scrimmage at 36 yards. And I thought we brought in the battering ram to help run out the clock, and I'm sure that was the approach, but Mr. 240, he breaks off the longest play of the game. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, and I will probably, you know, I guess my take on that is that Saban said after the game that he's been coaching these guys to not look at the scoreboard, that the score is 0-0. And so that Fowler kid on that play, that's what you wanted to see because he didn't know that they were up by 50 points. He just said, there's my opportunity to get in the end zone.
Yep.
So that was awesome.
What'd you think about Rob Ezell playing quarterback? And that was a surprise to everyone. But
Even him.
But what do you think about Rob Ezell? It appeared to me he's our third string quarterback. And apparently no one knew it.
Well, I started to say, based on your comments about, you know, him not even knowing that he was going to be in the game. And, you know, Saban talked about he did this just because he's such a spiritual leader for this team. And I didn't even realize that they bring this kid on road trips. So here he is counting as one of your 70 players on the road, which is interesting.
Yep.
But yeah, I guess that shows you we don't have a third string quarterback. I mean, obviously we'd pull the red shirt, you know, if need be, but that's a little unsettling that we don't have a third string quarterback. I think next year that situation will be resolved.
Yeah, I thought, I heard an interview with the Wisconsin coach, and you know, they ran up 83 points on their opponent last week, and they scored their last touchdown with their fifth-string quarterback, and I just think, gosh, we don't have one of those. Let me get one parting shot before we run to defense. I was having a conversation with someone in the stands. You know, Star Jackson is actually the third-string quarterback at Georgia State, so he went from our third-teamer to their third-teamer, and I think there's no small degree of irony that says Star Jackson probably would have played more snaps had he been on our team as opposed to Georgia State. So
yes, he would have played more in this game.
So I just think that's an interesting takeaway. I don't really know what to do with that other than just file that under the interesting facts file. Why don't we flip to defense? What did you see on defense that caught your eye?
You know, just like we talked about with offense, if you're the coach, you're wanting to play a lot of kids, you couldn't have scripted it any better on defense as well. Because defensively, we had the ball. Our defense was only on the field 9 minutes in the first half. Our defense was on the field 20 minutes in the second half. And so from a Coach Saban standpoint, the starters didn't play hardly at all in the first half. So he brings them back at the start of the second half just because that's what he does. But then they had not played much, right? So then you get to shuffle them out. You get to bring in all these backups. And guys, y'all are going to be out there two-thirds of the second half. And so it was like the perfect storm. Our backup offensive guys are scoring quick touchdowns, and then our defense is out there for 20 minutes in the second half, so we get a lot of these young guys to get to play.
Getting a whole lot of reps, familiarity, comfort on the field, interacting with one another, and again, playing against a live competition. I agree that, you know, that was something of a perfect storm there. I noticed we played a lot of nickel and a lot of dime. We may have played more dime last night, even early in the game with the starters, and I think it was just a concerted effort that, you know, we're going to try to keep these guys in front of us, and if they want to eat the clock, that's fine, because we'll put up enough points to win. We're just going to burn the clock, and so we played a lot of nickel and dime, which I thought was pretty interesting. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, part of me agrees with what you're saying. They came into the game and their quarterback had been pretty successful throwing the ball. But if you look at the line sheet, their starting quarterback was 4 of 11 with 4 picks.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, wait a minute, you come into the game attempting a pretty decent number of passes, okay? You've completed a, you know, 65, 68% of your passes. And so I don't know whether Georgia State saw that and said, okay, we're just going to run the ball because they rushed 32 times and only had 11 pass attempts, or whether we're out there doing that because that's what we need to work on. Because you and I both know the nickel is our base. They can say it's not, but it is.
Nickel's the base.
So even with the backup guys, they got to work on what they do in practice. That's the nickel.
No, that's true. And I think Georgia State's strategy in running the ball a lot more and not passing so much partly is to shorten the ball game. You have to know, guys, we want to be competitive. We want to play hard. We want to have fun out there, you know, while we're getting it handed to us. And so we can limit the degree to which it's handed to us if we shorten the ball game and they run a whole lot. It's interesting that their starting quarterback had 4 completions and 4 picks. But I think the stat of the game, at least on that side of the ball, is the fact that Georgia State mustered 74 passing yards in the whole game, and 55 of those came on their very first play from scrimmage, where they found that air quote seam in the zone, did a relatively short pass with a nice run appended, and fortunately we chased them down, and then subsequently we had Milliner bat down a ball, and there was some offensive pass interference that backed them back up, and Barron picked the ball off. So there was no real – once that play ended, there was no real threat of them scoring. But it was frustrating to see that that darn zone defense bite us in the rear again.
Yeah, and if you look at the numbers, because I didn't realize this watching the game, but that drive started at the 15-yard line. So here they come out with their first possession. We've scored a touchdown. Their back's against the wall already against them, a mighty division. This was their first game against a Division 1A opponent in the history of their program. So they start out at the 15-yard line. They complete that pass, and suddenly it goes, like you said, 55 yards. So now they're at our 30. They've gone from their 15 to our 30 on the first play of the game. You know Saban had to be jumping out of his skin at that point. But it just goes back to what we've talked about with that stupid zone.
Yeah, the zone does burn us a little bit. You know, not talking about man-to-man, but much later in the game when we had a lot of our third and fourth string players on defense in, I noticed that we specifically rotated back in Phelan Jones, who has been a starter. We rotated him back in at cornerback, and we had John Fulton on the other side. I know he's a freshman, hasn't played a lot, but he's talented, much more talented than some of the other players on the field. And we brought them in specifically to play man-to-man coverage on the receivers.
Tight man
on the receivers. And so, we were kind of kidding at the game. Hey, everyone in the middle, have fun playing the sandbox. We're going to take away your deep threats, and everybody else just have fun.
Yeah, you're not. Well, it's like what you talked about, the nickel and dime. It's like the whole theory of was, how can we let people play, get players participation, get them experience, but how can we get this game over as quickly as possible so we can flip the page to Auburn?
Yep, that's exactly right. And I just want to, last thing I want to mention here is D. Milliner. I've had a little back and forth with a buddy that is not yet ready to christen many emerging stars on this team. And, reluctantly, he'll agree that Lester's a star. If after Thursday night you don't agree that D. Milliner is an emerging star, then maybe we need to redefine what emerging star is. He had a couple of picks, batted down some balls.
He had 2 tackles for loss in the backfield.
Had 2 tackles for loss, and one of his picks was just a phenomenal athletic play. I mean, he soared to high point the ball ahead of the receiver. He's an athletic gem, and I just think he's an emerging superstar at cornerback on this team. Why don't you move us to special teams? What caught your eye on special teams?
You know, we talked about it briefly at the beginning. You know, I'm sure Coach Saban, gives the special teams a C or D. Well, I say that. I mean, he said in the post game that, we covered 9 kickoffs very well, but we covered 1 kickoff poorly.
Very poorly.
We talked about, last year that was a thorn in our side at the beginning of the year with Virginia Tech, and we had a few, lapses throughout the year.
Sure.
We talked about in the midseason review how this team has really done better against, kickoff return coverage. But he didn't want to call him out, but he said Fowler was the number 4. He was the cog in the wheel that stayed inside too much. And so I guess my point there is You've got two big guys on a kickoff return that are your hosses in the middle of the field, and typically they're like a linebacker. So he is 245 pounds, but we're starting to find out that he's a lot faster than we thought. So the fact that he's on the field at 245 as a bruising running back covering kickoffs is to his credit.
Yeah.
He might not see that position next year on the field. So, you know, I guess one lapse out of 10.
You know, it does point out, and this is a little rabbit trail, but it does point out the significance of every player on the field, every play, executing their unique responsibility. If, you know, I would run out of you know, fingers and toes maybe counting where one player has had a lapse on a play this year's team. And just think of the touchdowns that gave up. We gave up a touchdown on Georgia State because one player was out of position. You know, we gave up two touchdowns, busted zones to LSU, would have won that ball game. Gave up Tennessee's touchdown in the first quarter of that game, and
Arkansas's touchdown.
And you could just go back through, and each of those were one busted play, one player out of position, one player not following his rule. And it's the analogy of the weakest link in the chain really is the strength of the chain. And so on defense, the one player that's out of position, that's how strong or how weak your defense is going to be. But going back to special teams, you know, D might be a little harsh, but I'll tell you who's given the special teams an F, and that's the Gamblers. You made a point during the ball game that it was a 60-point spread. Wouldn't want to touch that with someone else's money. And of course, we win 63-7. And so, especially you're kicking special teams.
56 points. Oh,
yeah, you're kicking special teams a little bit for giving up that, and you're probably also kicking the field goal kickers a little bit for missing two field goals on the game. And so,
yeah, what do you think about that? Because we have two opportunities. We have Cade Foster for 54 yards, and then we have Shelley for the 27-yarder. You know, that's frustrating that those two – that's why I gave them a C or D, because we had the kickoff return and they missed both of those field goals.
Yeah, you know, it's more ironic, I guess, than anything, and we didn't need the points in this game. Although, it could be that we need them next week. We had our long kicker miss a long one. We had a short kicker miss a short one. And so, you know, the symmetry there is perfectly horrible. In terms of special teams, we're beating some guys up, but, yay, we saw some fantastic play on special teams. You know, we blocked a punt.
That's true.
Chavis blocked a punt, and we returned for a touchdown. Brandon Gibson. On the subsequent kickoff, Cade Foster, the kicker, jarred loose the ball from the runner, and Brandon Gibson recovered. So that was nice to see. Those are big plays. Those are the type of momentum-shifting big plays that you just don't see every week. And I think it's even been a couple of years since we've blocked a punt. And then Jarrell Harris, and we kind of beat up on Jarrell Harris, and, you know, he's this generation's Aries Monroe, but he was a headhunter on special teams. He got a guy, and it got him across the chest, but really effectively clotheslined a guy. I thought he really looked really good and was playing with some passion on special teams.
You know, even on defense, though, it's like, you know, I thought he was more effective in the middle of the field when he started at middle linebacker at the beginning of the year. You can see why C.J. Mosley is getting the – we thought Jarrell Harris at the beginning of the season was going to be the nickel or even play the star. They talked about him playing the star because of his ability to play that linebacker/safety role.
Yep.
And obviously C.J. Mosley's ability to play in space is, you know, and his speed is why he's in the game. What I thought I saw from Jarrell is if he stays with this team next year, which is a big if. He could go start for a bunch of other football teams, I think.
Yeah.
Just because of his athletic ability and a maybe less sophisticated defense. I think we saw that. I think his role on this team is going to be that rabbit rusher, because he closed on the quarterback last night and had two quarterback hurries where he was 4 or 5 yards from the quarterback and he just turned it on.
Yes.
And suddenly he was putting his helmet in the quarterback's chest. It's like, that might be your role, man. You're just our third down specialist guy.
Yeah, and I was kidding with a buddy that we sit in seats with, and you know, I guess maybe the humor was lost. But if you were just observing last night's game, you might actually make the mistake to think that Jarrell Harris is actually a very good player and a team leader. I mean, he showed flashes of brilliance last night, and I just, you know, just lament the fact, where is that on a week-to-week basis. That would really add some personality to our defense if that were there. And, And, you know, maybe it was an emerging moment. We keep saying that he's going to do that. And so maybe last night was the breakthrough. Time will tell. Who are you giving your mini game ball to?
You know, my mini game ball is going to have to go to a player who I had a lot of high praise for at the beginning of the year. Chris Jordan finally shined. You know, I've been waiting for Chris Jordan to shine all year. He's battling injuries. You know, he's whether it's injuries or what have you, that's allowed Nico and CJ Mosley to step ahead of him. You know what? If the guy never ends up being any more than a backup, because he was a starter a lot last year because of Dante's injuries, last night he at least filled up the stat sheet. He had 5 tackles, 2 tackles for loss. He had an interception, and he had a sack. So I guess I just got to give him some kudos. I mean, you know, a sack, a pick, and tackle for loss, he had a good ball game.
He did have a good ball game. And
we need his veteran leadership, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, we do, and I hope that he overcomes some of his injuries and that he battles back and next year is a true cog on the team. I think probably, you know, a second team linebacker, some depth at the position, you know, maybe the fourth linebacker on the field. But I think he can certainly contribute to the team next year, and I hope he has the opportunity to do that. I've got a lot of balls. And in terms of giving out my game balls, and you know, Coach Saban in the interview after the game talked about just an opportunity of a lifetime for a lot of the walk-ons and a lot of the backups, and just some of the names that you know, some of these names, most of these names, I'm hardly familiar with, and so you know, we see an Ezell, and you know, we all know Ezell, but we see an Ezell play both wide receiver and quarterback. We see a fullback, halfback, Bates. We see Nick Tinker. We see Neighbors, we see a running back, Howell, we see a Strickland, a Joyner, a Pennington, a Blaylock, a Ming, a Gray, a Skelton, a DeJohn, and a McAllister. And I don't know very many of these players, but, you know, for the rest of their lives, they'll have the opportunity to say that they stepped on the field. You know, it's one thing to be a scout teamer and not get to play, not get to dress, not get to participate at all, but to actually step on the field and play in a game, not the back end of an A-Day, but in a live, real game. Hats off to these guys. So I'm going to award a mini game ball to them.
No, that's a good idea. And, you know, because they can say that, they have an extra pep in their step this week.
Sure.
As they're given the looks on scout team that we need before Auburn.
Yep.
They can stick their chest out a little bit more this week.
Yep, that's true. That's true. What's your takeaway from this game?
You know, it unfolded like we wanted to, with the exception of the breakdown on the one kickoff return and the 2 missed field goals. You know, if all those things turn out the way you want them to, you know, suddenly it's a 69-0 final score, and it's like, my gosh. You know, I mean, I guess if there's just 3 or 4 plays that didn't go their way, the difference is the caliber of the opponent. It didn't allow those 3 or 4 plays to hurt you a la LSU. I think nobody got hurt. The starters got in, got out quickly. They were able to flip the page. You know, it went like we wanted to. One other thing I'll say real quick is, because I noticed toward the end of the game, the punter and the kicker and the long snapper for Georgia State was corralled over to the fence by a mom or a supporter to take a picture. And I remember coming to you as just a funny takeaway. It's their first year as a football program. These kids are like, hey, we're in Bryant-Denny Stadium against the University of Alabama on ESPN. But imagine a Nick Saban turning back and looking at a Cade Foster and Jeremy Shelley and jumping their crap because they're taking a picture during a football game.
Well, and that's true. And I think there is a, you know, you play to a standard, as Saban says. And I do think there's a little bit of a different standard for a team like that. And if you're Bill Curry, their coach, you have to be glad that this is the last game of the season, because you can tell your team, in effect, our season is over. Here's what our record is. Now we're going to go have fun in this game, and this is going to be a lifetime opportunity for you guys to get to play in front of this kind of crowd and against this kind of team. And it truly is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And I'm actually going to segue that into my takeaway. And I'm going to take a shot at the some of the media folks, and there's already been some articles written, but take a shot at some of the media folks who are just incapable of an original idea and an original thought. And all the press is big, mean Alabama beating up on poor Georgia State. That's lazy analysis, because it takes two to tango. And so when you take a team like Georgia State in their first year of existence, and they get to come over to Tuscaloosa, cash a $1 million check and give their players a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, well, guess what? We have funded their athletic department
for two or three years.
San Jose State, early in the season, big old bad Alabama plan, San Jose State. Well, their football team almost went bankrupt 2 years ago, and they got the Alabama game on the books this year for about $1 million, and they went right after us to play Wisconsin and cash another $1 million check. That's how those programs, and this is the underbelly maybe of college football, and it is what it is, but these small programs, they subsist on cashing these big checks, and we're going to go in and we're going to give our guys an opportunity to play against a big opponent. We're going to, you know, have an L on our win-loss, but this is how we sustain a program. And without Alabama and Auburn played, you know, UTC a couple of weeks ago, and every big program does it, without these games, those little programs go away. And so that's my big takeaway. This is not big, mean Alabama. It's actually, you could say, you know, benevolent Alabama, that we're willing to take a program like this, take the shot on the chin, because there's going to be the idiots that don't do analysis and they just want to throw stones. So we're going to take that, but then we're going to fund this program in Georgia. And so that, you know, that's the kind of the way that that I'm going to take a look at that. Moving ahead, Friday, we've got it's sort of a counterbalanced week. We have an extra day. We play on a Thursday. Next week, we play on a Friday. But we've got the Auburn Tigers coming to town. What do you think about those guys?
You know, I'm pretty worried about the game just because we've played a lot of running quarterbacks this year. We have not shown an ability to handle the running quarterbacks very well. Our defensive ends and outside linebackers do not keep containment the way Lorenzo Washington and a Brandon Dietrich did.
Yep.
And, you know, Auburn's got seven guys on their team who have caught passes, who are averaging over 15 yards a catch. They've got four guys on their team who have had touchdown scoring plays of over 70 yards. So my point is they are the epitome of the fast break up and down of, say, a basketball team analogy. And so this whole hurry-up offense, and, you know, we saw them a couple weeks ago against Georgia come to the line of scrimmage, and they knew they had more guys on one side, quick snap, score a touchdown. You know, they just have so many weapons. This game's going to be a very tough game for Alabama.
Yeah, I agree. They do well what we don't, and they're going to spread us out, and we've struggled with teams that do that. They're going to run the quarterback, and they have probably the best running quarterback in college football right now in terms of just being a horse and not running out of bounds and being his own blocker. And so we're going to struggle with that, and we're going to have to play assignment football. And we talked in this podcast and we talked in others, you know, where one person can blow an assignment and it's costly. And I'm afraid that we could potentially see a couple of those mistakes in this game. We need to play disciplined assignment football, not have those kinds of screw-ups, make them earn every yard that they get. I think we have the opportunity to put points on the board, but it's going to be incumbent on our defense to really shut them down. And I'm not as confident as I wish I were. I think we win. I think I don't know if that's my heart or head. Maybe it's a 24-21 type ball game, and we might need one of those long field goals at the end of the game to be the difference.
Well, I think two more things I want to touch on. Number one, we saw against Georgia that Georgia exploited Auburn's secondary. Alabama has got to protect the quarterback. They've got to protect the quarterback. They have to take shots down the field. This dink and dunk stuff is not going to work against the speed of Auburn's defense. We've got to take shots to loosen up the field on defense because passing is not how they start, you know. But and also too, because they're all misdirection and, you know, all these trick plays and stuff. I would love it if we would play more man. I wish we would almost put our young corners, who are now the redshirt freshman is becoming a sophomore, and that true freshman's really a sophomore is, you know, now too, and mm-hmm. put them on an island and give us more, you know, give us more guys to direct toward their running game and Cam Newton. And really, I want to see, like we did against Arkansas, where we take some chances. I think we have to take some chances defensively in this game, and we got to take some chances by going down the field offensively in this game.
Yeah, we got to open up this ball game like we closed out the game against Arkansas, and I think we did play some man in that situation. And there's no doubt that we're going to see some new wrinkles. And so maybe man might be a wrinkle. Maybe there's some different plays. It'll be interesting to see. But I think as we sit down next week to talk about the podcast, win, lose, or draw, we're going to be talking about new wrinkles. And maybe the outcome of the game is dependent upon the success of those wrinkles. Which coach out-coaches the other ones. And I think you're onto something. I think we are going to see some man in this game. So, you know, we'll see.
Hurry-up offense on us real quick, because I will say that McElroy, it seems to help our team get in a rhythm. So I'd love it if we started the game going hurry-up offense.
Yeah, who knows?
I'm going to tell you, I think it's going to be like 16-14.
Okay.
I think it's going to be very close. I think Alabama's going to pull it out. It's going to be like 16-14.
All right, very good. There you have it. We're both predicting a field goal game, and we could actually see a shorter long kick decide the game late in it. Hey, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and roll Tide.
Thank you for tuning in to the Alabama Football Podcast, the only Alabama podcast giving away BCS championship tickets. For more, find us on Facebook under Alabama Football Podcast.
Aye.
Visit us on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com.
Aye.
Email at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com.
Aye.
And don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes.
Aye.
Blow the horn, let's go.
And everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's so pleasant to play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Dominate, we're playing against.